Michael Hawes, and you're listening to Trail of Tears. The Ancient Lusitanian Art of Dendropractic. Many people run to doctors for everything. Animals usually crawl under a bush and let God figure it out. People used to remember that they are beloved creatures, and I'm here to tell you that some still do. I am one. I had the good fortune to meet another, Mr. Rodriguez, on the trail one late September day. He lived with his pretty, dark-eyed, plump wife, Maria, on my first route. It was a snug, well-kept little house with a large garage. I first saw Rodriguez out in the driveway sawing logs. He was about 150 pounds, slim, handsome as a movie star, and his eyes sparkled like the sunlight on the ocean. He always wore the same blue checkered, thick flannel work shirt and green suspenders. He looked to be a healthy 50 years old. Turned out he was 80. His movements didn't betray his age because he was a relaxed, methodical man by nature. Here's how we met. I couldn't help but admire his woodpile. I was awestruck. There in his side yard was the most immaculate Catholic cord of fragrant wood I had ever seen up to this writing. It was raised off the damp ground, perfectly square and level, and had a snug-fitting blue tarp tailor-made to roof the top. Each piece was exactly the same dimensions, and you couldn't have inserted a cigarette paper between the pieces, so precisely were they cut and stacked. I asked him if I could adore this marvel for a moment, and he stopped cutting and joined me for a smoke at the woodpile. He told me the story of how he had learned to work with wood as a boy in Portugal, how he had met his wife at the town well when he was 14, and he answered all my questions about cork trees, oak trees, pine trees, and the river Tagus. His favorite things were women, trees, little children, good tobacco, and wine. After all, what else is there really? When I told him I had read Camoin, he slapped his knee and said, "Miguel, come it, I will show it you is something." He took me by the shoulder like a father would, and led me into the shade of his garage. He motioned me to sit on a small chair. He walked over to a table and got a glass, like the kind you keep in the bathroom for washing out your mouth. He walked slowly over to a large concrete tank. He lifted a wooden hatch and showed me his fermentation tank. Pausing for effect, he waved his arm along the length and breadth of this handmade, polished, fine-grade cement, perfectly square, 50-odd-gallon cistern. Above the tank were three oaken barrels fitted with old-fashioned brass taps. He put the little glass under a brass tap, turned to me, raised one eyebrow, and turned the spigot. A beautiful red liquid flowed out. It was the same shade of red as the jerseys of the national soccer team of Portugal. "These barrels come from old country. Use it before for shipping cherries." He handed me the glass and told me to look through it at the light outside. If it had been a crayon, the label would have read, "Sangue translúcido de Campoens." He told me to smell it. I closed my eyes and breathed it in. The spirit whisked me away to the pine-clad hills, down along a river to where cherry trees grew, and onto a beach where men were building ships with oak, and gypsy girls danced barefooted around smoky cork fires. Okay, Miguel, now you drink it." We had three small glasses of his Portuguese red, and we shared my tobacco. While we drank, Rodriguez asked me if I wanted to hear a story. I said I sure would. "A man, he's a walk at home one day after work it. He sees a gypsy woman. The woman asks him would he like it she gonna tell it him his a futura. The man he says okay. The gypsy tell it the man everything and the man give it her money and keep it walking. Later, the man's friend sees him a coming down the road. But the man is a weep it like a baby. The friend he asks it what's the matter. The man tell it to him about the gypsy. His friend say, so what? The man tell it his friend, his son of a bitch it gypsy tell it me I'm gonna have it a three sons. That's great, say the other man. No, my friend, gypsy told it me one son will be at a liar, one son will be at a thief, and one son will be at a murderer. I feel it like I'm gonna die. It's son of a bitch it. Wait, it's okay, say the man of friend. Look it, here's what to do it. Send it the first son to be at a lawyer, okay? Send it the second son to be at a priest, okay? Send it the third son to be at a doctor, okay? I laughed until I had trouble getting my breath. Rodriguez merely lifted his right eyebrow and held it there till my fit was over. From that day, we were fast friends. Fall came and turned into winter. On bad days, Rodriguez would come out to the driveway to get the mail and pull me into his house. Hey, Miguel, why no come it inside? Sit by the fire. Warm it up at the Luigi. Mama made it a something to eat. Want to hear the story about a donkey, an undertaker, and a nun? One visit, after looking at the pictures of Rodriguez's grandsons, the old man told me a very interesting story. He had worked in the lumber industry in Portugal as a young man and had injured his back. He sustained a misaligned disc as a result of a fall. The injury had plagued him all through his best years and followed him to Canada, where he engaged in furniture making at a small factory. One day, he said, he had been gluing some pieces together for a large table while another man was ripping long planks on the electric table saw. The man's pusher stick had slipped, and this caused the inboard piece to jam against a powerful blade. The 4-foot length of oak had shot across the workshop floor as if hurled by Zeus. The butt end had connected with Rodriguez's flannel shirt 1 inch to the right of his misaligned disc, immediately snapping the wayward bone back into its rightful place. The chronic pain and loss of range of motion he had suffered for 30 years was gone, and it never returned. His wife swore that he spoke the truth. Rodriguez rose up to demonstrate his flexibility and raised one eyebrow. His wife brought more snacks. About the donkey and the priest and the nun? I don't know it. I was not there. Sounded about right, though, eh? I told him the story of how I'd hurt my own neck vertebrae when I was a teen. When I was 17, I was in a car accident. I was living up in Squamish and had offered to drive to Vancouver to buy Led Zeppelin tickets for all my friends. I borrowed my mom's bright orange Toyota Corolla, and as I was returning from a friend's place in Lynn Valley on the way back north, a woman in a Buick Land Yacht blew a stop sign. She T-boned me directly on my driver's side. My neck bent like a Japanese farmer's waist when he meets the emperor. My head went through the glass of the rolled-up window. I remember playing in an automobile junkyard in Louisiana when I was small, and it was there that I learned how hard safety glass is. It took several throws of a chunk of concrete to get through the plastic laminated tempered glass. I remember throwing bricks into the air with a friend about the same age. It was a pissing contest to see who could throw it higher. My second brick toss came down perfectly square onto my noggin, and the projectile split neatly in two. I had not a scratch and no headache. Dang, said my friend. It was December and the ground was snow-covered. The force of the collision had pushed the Corolla all the way off the road onto the sidewalk, and it came to rest after displacing a bus bench. The driver's side was caved in so bad I had to crawl out the glassless window like James Bond. There was a little girl in the mammoth back seat and a nervous woman in a red coat in the front seat of the maroon Buick. The little girl said, "It was all your fault, Mommy. You ran a red light. You were wrong. It's all your fault." God bless little girls. The two ladies in their chariot had almost no damage. This was in the days of chrome bumpers. I spoke to the woman and asked if she could swap phone numbers and deal with all the paperwork at a later date. She was adamant that we file a police report immediately. I was wondering how I was going to get my mom's car out of the remains of the bus bench and find a police station and still make it home in time for supper. "The police is right there," said the little girl, pointing behind me. Sure enough, it turned out we were yards away from the North Vancouver RCMP main office. Some pieces of the Corolla were on their property. I said I'd go first, as I was in a hurry to get back to Squamish, and I assured the woman that I was really okay. I walked across the lawn into the station to report. A policeman handed me a paper to draw the accident map and to write down all the details. I borrowed his pen and began to fill out the paper. I lit a smoke and took a big drag. At the same time I exhaled, I saw that the cigarette was straw-colored and way too big. Such are the effects of shock. In my addled state, I had accidentally reached for a joint that a friend had given me for buying his ticket. I put it out immediately and rolled a cigarette. The policeman never looked up. Soon, I was on my way up the familiar highway. It began to snow again, and by the time I got home, there was about 4 inches on the left side of my body. My mom fainted in the parking lot when she saw the mangled car. I started to get a headache that night. I took a Bufferin. The ache went away soon, and the only reminder of the accident was that I had tension in the muscles on one side of my neck ever after that. I had to crack it several times a day like you do your knuckles, especially now that I was packing mail. I'm used to it, I told him. Next fall, when the broadleaf trees were going to sleep, I got confirmation on Rodriguez's story. I was cutting across a yard at full clip with pouches both fully loaded. There was a plum tree in that yard, and I heard a dog bark over my left shoulder. I cranked my head around to sight the animal, and before I knew it, I had gooned myself on a low-slung branch. The force halfway knocked my wool toque off and sat me down unceremoniously on the frosty grass. My forehead was smarting on the right side, but no skin was broken. The direction of the blow was opposite that of the car crash. Something in my neck that had been crooked for the past 17 years was now straight. Muscles that had been wired tight now had room to relax. "Is son of my bitch it," I said. I looked up through the branches at the October sky. I raised my left eyebrow and slowly got up on my feet. You could say, methodically. Boy, did I have a good one for Rodriguez.